This is LBC with Matt Fry. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Okay, let's go to the other side of the pond, to the United States, where we know there's an election campaign going on that's really geared up. But of course, Donald Trump, who will be the nominee for the Republican Party, is spending more time in court at the moment than he is on the campaign trail. He's in court in New York. He's being charged with fiddling the books in order to pay alleged hush money for a former adult film star, Stormy Daniels. He's denied the charges. He's pled innocent on this, not guilty, as it were. But the trial is going on. They finally found some jurors. And then, very dramatically yesterday, a man called Max Azzarello, who was a protester outside the courthouse in Lower Manhattan, held up a poster that said Trump is with Biden and they're about to fascist coup us, turning that into a verb. But then he also doused himself with a flammable liquid, set light to himself, and then died of his burn wounds overnight. This is very sad. What made him do it? What's going on? Let's go to Simon Marks, LBC's Washington correspondent, up early for us. Good morning, Simon.
Morning, Matt.
Good to speak to you. It's been a few weeks. Tell us, first of all, about poor Max Azzarello.
Well, awful events that played out live on television, because, of course, even though only jury selection was taking place in court yesterday, all the television networks, of course, have their live positions outside the courthouse and are broadcasting relentlessly here in the United States from the steps outside that Manhattan courthouse. And in fact, on CNN, they were on air as this self-immolation occurred. And we watched for about 7 or 8 minutes as the two reporters on camera were sort of offering live commentary of what they were seeing opposite their camera position as smoke started sort of wafting across the screen. According to friends of this 37-year-old man, he had descended into paranoia. They describe him as a caring person whose paranoia had led him down a dark path in today's New York Times. He'd been outside that court. This wasn't his first time outside. He'd been there in previous days earlier in the week and, as you say, Matt, had been holding up that sign accusing Joe Biden and Donald Trump of preparing to engage in a fascist coup in the United States. He apparently had been throwing conspiracy theory pamphlets around in the minutes before he reached into his bag, poured some kind of flammable liquid over himself and set himself alight. But, you know, all of this, I think, is indicative of the fact that that location in New York is a magnet now for supporters of Donald Trump, for detractors of Donald Trump, and for people who want to take actions that are guaranteed to secure coverage on television. And it is, I think, testament to the brittleness of American society as we continue to slog through what is going to be another 6 months of this election campaign, that these kind of awful incidents can and will occur as we engage in that slog.
As ever, American politics, you know, turns into a fever stage, and never more so than for Donald Trump. Just tell us about Trump himself. So here he is in court. He's got to show up in court. That was one of the rules. He's complained about the fact that it was cold in court. He looks incredibly upset and glum when he's not falling asleep. The fact that this guy who's trying to become president again is having to spend time in court every day, even during jury selections, is quite an extraordinary development, isn't it?
It is. He's complained, and also some of the prospective jurors complained about how cold it was in that courtroom. You know what happens here in this country. The minute spring begins, all the air conditioning gets turned on all over the country, and suddenly, you know, public spaces are chilled to meat locker status, which I suspect is what's taking place in that courtroom. I don't think it's psychological warfare. I think it's just a building superintendent who's turned the air conditioning on. It's also a pretty grubby courtroom, apparently. There is an odour in there that is rather unpleasant, according to reporters who have been in the room. Look, I think that this cuts in two different ways for Donald Trump. On the one hand, it's derailing him. I mean, he has to be in court every day for proceedings.
So how long could that take? How many days?
Well, this is going to The judge has warned jurors 6 weeks, maybe longer, which when you look at the charges that he's facing, falsifying business records, I mean, is extraordinary, but is redolent of the fact that the prosecution and the defense want to bring so many witnesses to this trial. The only day it's not sitting is Wednesdays and, of course, weekends. But he's basically grounded in New York City, as we observed on Tom's program yesterday. Yeah. You know, when you hear from him, it's in an echoey courthouse corridor. Now, of course, Donald
Trump... Does that damage him, do you think?
Well, I'm not sure if it does. That's why I think it cuts both ways. Mm. On the one hand, it's taking him off the campaign trail. And there's no question that that is hugely problematic for the Trump campaign. He groused this week that not only is he being prevented from attending his son's graduation from high school, but he's also being prevented from traveling to the battleground states, to Michigan, to Wisconsin, to Pennsylvania, to all the states where this election is going to be won or lost. But I think it does cut in a different way for Donald Trump, because the more he is able to point to the absurdity from his perspective and from the perspective of many outsiders, that this case, you know, very much the runt of the legal criminal cases that he's facing, is the one that has come to trial first over what is a relatively minor issue, the falsification of business records to cover up a hush money payment that he made to Stormy Daniels in the dying days of the 2016 election campaign, which is a long time ago. It does allow him to advance his argument that he is the victim of what he calls lawfare, the weaponized use of criminal statutes to go after him by his Democrat opponents.
But Simon, that's also when you compare it to the other charges of sedition, of essentially mounting a coup to overturn the election result. But, you know, forgive me if I'm wrong, but imagine a candidate, you know, 10 years ago, who had been accused of paying hush money to a former porn star before an election. That would have been it. They would have gone out of shame, if anything else.
Gary Hart
in the 1980s.
Gary Hart, eat your heart out,
exactly. I mean, this is how much Trump has moved the dial, right?
Absolutely. That shows how far this country has moved under the influence of Donald Trump. I mean, he is the prime cause of those shifts societally, aided and abetted, of course, by the existence of social media and the ease with which misinformation and conspiracy theories can spread, people siloed in their own media channels, either watching this from the left on MSNBC or watching it from the right on Fox News, and the entire ecosystem of right and left-wing social media and digital streaming channels that exist. And so everybody gets their own truth. And I mean, it was notable that outside that court you had pro-Trump demonstrators this week who were saying that this is all being orchestrated by Joe Biden. This is an effort by Joe Biden and the Democratic Party to remove the presumed Republican presidential candidate from the field of play. And equally, you had supporters of the charges against Donald Trump saying no one is above the law. He absolutely must face trial on every single case that he is facing. The problem that the Department of Justice has got, and that the authorities in New York and Georgia have got, these four jurisdictions where he's facing trial, is that this may be the only trial that takes place before the election.
Right.
And it is by far the least serious and the one that is least likely to result in a custodial sentence. So if you're Donald Trump, even though you've got to be stuck in that courtroom for 6 weeks, actually, it may help your case. It may cement your support among your core supporters, who will continue to believe that this is a judicial persecution.
So just a couple of things. He's unlikely to spend any jail time, even if he is found guilty.
Well, if he's found guilty, jail is a possibility. Yeah. And there is no question that he has deeply irritated the judge in this case, Juan Merchan. But most legal analysts argue that even if he is convicted, for a first-time offender, falsifying business records is highly unlikely to result in a custodial sentence. And that's before you layer on top of this all the Secret Service requirements that would have to be taken into consideration in any jail where Donald Trump was housed. Because he doesn't just go into a jail cell. well, as a former president, he's got Secret Service protection for the rest of his life.
Can you imagine all those Secret Service agents volunteering to spend time in jail with him?
It's a great job.
We've got some good news and we've got some bad news.
Yes.
Now, tell me, explain to me why the other three cases, one in the state of Georgia, which is a state case, and then the two federal cases, one on sedition and one on hamstring away those documents in Mar-a-Lago, why may they be delayed until after the election?
Okay, well, the Georgia case is in deep trouble because of the behaviour of the Fulton County District Attorney, Fani Willis, who, as you know, brought this wide-ranging series of charges against Donald Trump, even using anti-mafia statutes against him and some of his accused co-conspirators. But she was engaging in an affair with a prosecutor that she brought onto the case, which has led to all of these questions about whether the prosecutor and maybe Ms. Willis herself financially benefited from that arrangement. So it is beset by difficulties created entirely by the district attorney herself.
Right.
Multiple delays taking place there. Documents case, the classified documents case in Florida, is being overseen by a Trump-appointed judge who is infuriating the Department of Justice special prosecutor bringing the case, accused of dragging her feet. There's no current indication that is going to come to trial before the election, although it's the one case of the three remaining ones that might actually see some legal action in a courtroom this side of November.
Right.
The sedition case, which is obviously the most serious case that he faces at a federal level,
in D.C.
We're waiting for the Supreme Court to rule on Trump's claim that he enjoys blanket immunity. And there are all sorts of opportunities for the Trump lawyers to continue throwing spanners in that particular work. So highly unlikely we're going to see that in court before November. And remember, if Trump wins in November, the minute he takes office in January, he can try to instruct his attorney general to drop those two federal cases against him. The one in New York about Stormy Daniels would by then be over, presumably. Mm-hmm. The only one outstanding at that point would be the Georgia case, which I think Trump insiders believe is just going to collapse under its own weight.
Okay, so at the moment, things are going his way, aren't they? Despite the fact that he's got to spend a lot of time in an over-air-conditioned courtroom in New York.
Well, yes, I think that's not known at this point.
I'm not saying that he's going to win this, sir. I'm just saying that considering what he's got stacked up against him, you know, the financial burden of all those extraordinary fines, you know, then all these court cases. I mean, you know, at the beginning of the year, we were talking about a bloke, you know, who might not have an Oval Office, but a rectangular one with iron bars.
Yes, going his way in the sense that I don't think a jail cell immediately awaits him.
Yeah.
But for all this time that he is stuck in New York in that courtroom, Joe Biden is relentlessly traveling to the battleground states. He's off to Florida next week, a state that the Democrats had all but written off, except now they suddenly think it's in play because of some recent abortion rulings that have taken place down there. So they really think there's a possibility, perhaps, of reactivating Florida as a state in play. He's been in Pennsylvania this week, and his campaign financially advantaged over the Trump campaign by tens of millions of dollars is spending money. So the Biden campaign, even though it's only spring, has just dropped $30 million in seven battleground states, engaging in an advertising tsunami and hiring hundreds of people to staff those offices that will be all important in mounting the Get Out the Vote operation later this year.
Mm.
And there is some evidence in some polls that is helping Joe Biden. Certainly in the state of Wisconsin, he's taken a lead over Donald Trump.
Yeah.
In other states where he has been behind, he appears to be closing the gap. Now, it does depend on which poll you read, but I think Republicans will worry that while Donald Trump is holed up in this New York court, Joe Biden is out there, you know, while the cat's away, the mice are able to play. And Joe Biden is very much trying to put those battleground states in play now, which he needs to do under any circumstances, because if he can't put them in play, this election is completely over before it begins.
And people are talking about Trump in court rather than Biden, you know, Biden baby stepping his way from one, you know, airplane to another. Just very briefly, big vote in Congress today on Ukraine and Israel aid package. Just give it to me in 30 seconds.
Massively important. It's been delayed, as you know, for months because of Republican infighting. It looks like Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, with the support of Democrats, will be able to get that $60 billion funding bill for Ukraine through, which will lead to President Volodymyr Zelensky in Kiev being able to exhale at last.
Yeah.
But it might be the last thing Mike Johnson does, because it is perfectly possible that he will be ousted from the speakership by Trump-backed Republicans as a result of that, and he is fighting tooth and nail to try and stop that from happening.
This is the Speaker of the House who, when asked what his policies was, just read the Bible and you'll find out. Extraordinary characters there. Simon Marks, as ever, LBC's Washington correspondent. Thank you very much indeed.